Chapter 14. "He's late," Pieter de Wahl, minister of the South African Defense Forces, said in Afrikaans. He lifted the window of the coach and leaned out, searching the road bordering the railroad siding. His words were directed at a tall, slender man with compelling blue eyes and dressed in the uniform of an army colonel. "If Patrick Fox is late," the colonel said, swirling the drink in his hand, "there must be a good reason for it." De Wahl turned from the open window and brushed both hands through a thicket of gray, wavy hair. He looked more like a professor of ancient languages than like the iron-willed head of the second-largest military power on the continent. Not that he had exactly inherited a plum job. De Wahl was the fifth defense minister in 7 years. His predecessor had lasted less than 5 months. "Typical English performance," he said impatiently. "An Englander lives only for gin, the Queen, and a practiced air of indifference. They cannot be relied upon." "If you so much as even imply to his face that he is English, Herr Minister, Fox will become most uncooperative." Colonel Joris Zegler downed his drink and poured another. "Fox is a Scotsman. I respectfully suggest, sir, that you try not to forget that." De Wahl made no show of anger at Zegler's insubordinate tone. He regarded advice from his intelligence chief seriously. It was no secret within the ministry that de Wahl's success in smashing the advances by outside terrorists and suppressing local uprisings was due largely to the ingenious infiltration of the insurgent organizations by Zegler's highly trained operatives. "Englander, Scotsman, I would prefer dealing with an Afrikaner." "I agree," said Zegler. "But Fox is the best qualified to offer an opinion on the project. A month-long computer search of experienced military personnel proved that." He opened a file folder. 25 years Royal Navy, 15 of them in ship's engineering, 2 years captain of HMS Audacious, final time in service spent as engineering director of the Grimsby Royal Navy Shipyard, purchased a farm in northern Natal and retired there 11 years ago. "And what does your computer make of the fact that he coddles his Bantu workers?" "I must admit that offering his blacks and coloureds shares of his farm profits is the gesture of a liberal. But there can be no denying Fox has built up the finest estate in northern Natal in an extremely short length of time. His people are loyal beyond belief. Woe to the radical who tries to stir up trouble on the Fox farm." De Wahl was in the midst of formulating another pessimistic statement when there was a knock on the door. A young officer entered and came to attention. "Forgive the interruption, Herr Minister, but Captain Fox has arrived."
"Show him in," De Wahl said.
Fox ducked his head under the low doorway and entered. De Wahl stared up at him in silence. He had not expected someone of such proportions, nor someone whose face was freshly cut in a dozen places. He extended his hand.
"Captain Fox, this is indeed a pleasure," de Wahl said in Afrikaans. "It was good of you to make the trip."
Fox crushed de Wahl's hand within his.
"Sorry, sir, but I do not speak your language."
De Wahl smoothly slipped into English.
"Forgive me," he said with a faint smile. "I forget that you Scotsmen do not take to strange tongues. We're just dunderheaded, I guess."
"Pardon me for saying so, Captain, but you look as though you shaved with a branch of thorns."
"I encountered an ambush. Bloody little devils broke my windshield. I would have stopped at the local hospital, but I was running late for our meeting."
De Wahl took Fox by the arm and steered him to a chair.
"I think we had better get a drink in you. Joris, will you do the honors?"
"Captain Fox, this is Colonel Joris Zegler, Director of Internal South African Defense."
Zegler nodded and held up a bottle.
"I take it you prefer whiskey, Captain?"
"Aye, that I do, Colonel."
De Wahl stepped over to the door and opened it.
"Lieutenant Anders, inform Dr. State that we have a patient for him. I suspect you will find him in his compartment dozing."
He closed the door and faced the room.
"First things first.
Now then, Captain, while we await the good doctor, perhaps you will be kind enough to provide us with a detailed report of your ambush."
The doctor came and went, grumbling good-naturedly over the rhinoceros hide Fox called skin.
Except for two wounds that called for three stitches each, the doctor left the rest unbandaged.
Lucky for you, those scratch marks don't match fingernail tracks, or you'd have a tough time explaining them to your wife, he joked as he snapped shut his bag.
You're certain the attack was not organized? Ziegler asked after the doctor departed.
Not likely, Fox replied. They were only ragged bush kids. God only knows what devil inspired them to go on a killing spree.
I am afraid your run-in with bloodthirsty juveniles is not an isolated occurrence, Duval said softly. Ziegler nodded in agreement.
Your story, Captain, fits the same crude modus operandi, if you will, of at least 12 other attacks in the last 2 months. If you want my opinion, Fox snorted, that damned AAR is in back of it.
Indirectly, the blame can be laid on the African Army of Revolution's doorstep. Ziegler drew on a pencil-thin cigar. Half the black boys between the ages of 12 to 18 from here to Cape Town would give their testicles to become an AAR soldier, Duval injected. You might call it a form of hero worship.
You have to give the devil his due, said Ziegler. Hiram Lusana is every bit as shrewd a psychologist as he is a propagandist and a tactician.
Aye, Fox said, looking over at the colonel.
I've heard a great deal about that bastard. How did he come to be leader of the AAR?
Self-imposed. He's an American black. Seems he made a vast sum of money in international drug smuggling. But wealth was not enough. He entertained dreams of power and grandeur. So he sold out his business to a French syndicate and came to Africa and began organizing and equipping his own army of liberation.
Seems a staggering undertaking for only one man, said Fox, even a wealthy one.
Not so staggering when you have help, and lots of it, Ziegler explained. The Chinese supply his arms, and the Vietnamese train his men. Fortunately, our security forces are able to keep them in a state of almost constant rout. But our government will surely fall if we are subjected to a prolonged economic blockade, added Duval. Lusana's game plan is to fight a clean war by the book. No terrorism, no killing of innocent women and children. His forces thus far have attacked only military installations. Then, by playing benevolent savior, he can gain total moral and financial support from the United States, Europe, and the Third World powers. Once he achieves these goals, he can exert his newly acquired influence to close off all our economic dealings with the outside world. Then the end of white South Africa is only a matter of weeks.
Is there no way to contain Lusana? Asked Fox.
Duval's bushy eyebrows rose.
There is one possibility, provided you give it your blessing.
Fox stared at the minister, his expression one of bewilderment. I'm only a beached sailor and a farmer. I know nothing about insurgent warfare. Of what use can I be to the Ministry of Defense? Duval did not answer, but simply passed Fox a leather-bound book about the size of a thin bookkeeping ledger. It's called Operation Wild Rose. The lights of Pembroke blinked on one by one in the evening dusk. A light rain had pelted the windows of the coach, leaving a myriad of streaks down the dust-coated glass. Fox's reading spectacles clung to his great nose and magnified his eyes as they darted back and forth over the pages without pause. He was so engrossed in what he was reading, he absent-mindedly chewed on the stem of a pipe that had long since burned out. It was a few minutes past 8 o'clock when he closed the cover of Operation Wild Rose. He sat there for a long moment as though in contemplation. Finally, he shook his head tiredly.
I pray to God it never comes to this, he said quietly. I share your sentiments, said Duval. But the time is fast approaching when our backs will be against the wall, and Operation Wild Rose may well be our final hope of escaping annihilation. I still fail to see what you gentlemen want from me.
Merely your opinion, Captain, said Ziegler. We've made feasibility studies of the plan and know what the computers say about its chances of success. We're hoping your years of experience will supply the pros and cons as judged by a human.
I can tell you the scheme is damn near impossible, said Fox. And for my money you can add insane as well. What you're proposing is terrorism at its worst.
Exactly, agreed Duval. By using a black hit-and-run force masquerading as members of the African Army of Revolution, we can swing international sympathy away from the blacks and to the white cause of South Africa.
We must have the support of countries like the United States to survive, Zegler explained.
What happened in Rhodesia can happen here, Duval went on. All private property, farms, stores, banks, seized and nationalized. Blacks and whites slaughtered in the streets. Thousands exiled from the continent with barely the clothes on their backs. A new black communist-oriented government, a despotic tribal dictatorship suppressing and exploiting their own people in virtual slavery.
You can be certain, Captain Fox, that if and when our government topples, it will not be replaced by one with democratic majority rule in mind.
We don't know for sure that that will happen here, said Fox. And even if we could look into a crystal ball and predict the worst, it would not condone unleashing Operation Wild Rose.
I'm not after a moral judgment, Duval said sternly. You've stated the plan is impossible. I will accept that.
After Fox left, Duval poured himself another drink.
The captain was frank. I'll give that to him.
He was also quite right, said Zegler. Wild Rose is terrorism at its worst.
Perhaps, Duval muttered. But what choice does one have when one is winning battles while losing the war?
I am not a grand strategist, Zegler replied, but I'm certain Operation Wild Rose is not the answer, Minister. I urge you to shelve it.
Duval considered Zegler's words for several moments.
All right, Colonel. Gather all data pertaining to the operation and seal it in the Ministry vault with the other contingency plans.
Yes, sir, said Zegler, his relief obvious.
Duval contemplated the liquid in his glass. Then he looked up with a thoughtful expression.
A pity, a great pity. It just might have worked.
Fox was drunk. If a monstrous claw had reached down and plucked away the long mahogany bar of the Pembroke Hotel, he would have fallen flat on his bandaged face. Dimly he saw that he was the only patron left in the room. He ordered another drink, noting in a mild sort of sadistic glee that it was long past closing time, and the 5-foot-5-inch bartender was uneasy about asking him to leave.
"Are you all right, sir?" the bartender probed cautiously.
"No, damn it!" Fox roared. "I feel bloody well awful!"
"Beggin' your pardon, but if it makes you feel so bad, why do you drink it?"
"It's not the whiskey that turns my guts. It's Operation Wild Rose."
"Sir?"
Fox looked furtively around the room and then leaned across the bar.
"What if I was to tell you I met with the Minister of Defense right down the street at the station, in his private railroad car not more than 3 hours ago?"
A smug smile curled the bartender's lips.
"The Minister must be one hell of a wizard, Mr. Fox."
"Wizard?
To be in two places at the same time."
"Make your point, man." The bartender reached under a shelf and threw a newspaper on the bar in front of Fox. He pointed to an article on the front page and read aloud the caption. "Defense Minister Peter Duval enters Port Elizabeth Hospital for surgery."
"Impossible!"
"That's this evening's paper," said the bartender.
"You have to admit, not only does the minister have extraordinary powers of recuperation, but one fast train as well. Port Elizabeth is over 1,000 kilometers to the south."
Fox snatched up the paper, shook the fuzziness from his vision, put on his glasses, and read the story. It was true. Clumsily, he threw a wad of bills at the bartender and staggered through the doorway, through the hotel lobby, and into the street. When he reached the railroad station, it was deserted. The moon's light glinted on empty rails. Duval's train was gone.